Welcome to Federal Insights for September, the future of work, sponsored by Box.
Hello, and welcome to the show. I'm Tom Temin. Work is changing, most likely permanently, thanks to the pandemic. Therefore, the systems supporting work have evolved and are still changing. All of it has cybersecurity implications. A slip up here could undo a lot of progress. From one agency perspective, I spoke with the cybersecurity analyst at the Argonne National Laboratory, Roland Variali. Let's start with Argonne National Laboratory. Just give us a quick overview of all of the work that goes on there, the type of work, the nature of it, and then maybe about your own work and what you do.
So Argonne's a federally funded research and development center associated with the Department of Energy. There's a lot of research and development that goes on, more of the natural and applied sciences and technologies. So there's a broad spectrum of work that happens at the lab, ranging from material science to computer science, physics, and then math, chemistry, physics, natural sciences, things like that.
And as a cybersecurity analyst, are you one of many, or what part of the lab structure do you fit into, and what kind of work do you do?
We are a relatively small team, but we interweave within a lot of different subjects. So that's one of the strongest draws at the laboratory, is you have a diverse group of scientists working on things. And so we get incorporated within other people's work, and we reach out to incorporate other scientists within our work as well to strengthen the depth of the research that we can do.
So you're not a cybersecurity practitioner for protecting the labs and the networks at Argonne, but rather research into the field of cybersecurity.
Correct. A lot of my research focuses on electrical vehicles and their charging infrastructure. There's a program office that works on the postures, the security posture of the lab as a whole. However, the group I'm a part of focuses on a lot of research and development, mostly towards infrastructure, grid protection, things like that.
And just out of curiosity, what are the special security considerations for car charging infrastructure as opposed to the rest of the electricity, which is way more ubiquitous so far than car charging stations?
So when you break it down, there are components that are reused over time and in different applications. So you'll see similar technologies existing within charging infrastructure as there is within the grid or within some like electric subsystems. So understanding how to secure those systems and how to keep them usable while keeping them secured and protected is really where our focus is and where our expertise lies, because we see a diverse group of these things in the wild. We learn over time, like, what are some best practices with this, and we implement a lot of standards and technology solutions that we've learned over time and that groups like NIST have published.
All right. So in the day-to-day work at the Argonne National Laboratory, you're on a university campus, you're outside Chicago. Most people went to work before the pandemic. What was it like? I mean, what was the normal procedures? And I guess maybe also how many people tended to telework before all of this?
I don't have exact telework numbers, but we do have alternative work schedules and telework incorporated within our normal working procedure. So I was accustomed to working usually 2 days from home a week, in addition to sometimes we have to travel as part of our job. So the infrastructure that we use at the lab is relatively distributed. So we have some cloud technologies, we have some other secure implementations that we've used to access our work files, other resources we need, create connections to things that we need to have access to in a range of environments and not just in one static place.
Got it. So basically you used your, say, I'm guessing a laptop PC or Mac, in the case of a lot of academics, to access resources from wherever you might be, as opposed to having to be on the Ethernet inside an office somewhere.
Correct. And I think that's a problem that a lot of people face right now, is that distributed nature of work. So many people are used to preparing security solutions for centralized access of things and incorporating how can someone work from home with perhaps a not so secure device and access secure materials doesn't really come into their purview until a case like this that may happen. So we've considered that because of the normal operating procedure of the lab and the the nature of us traveling to different nations and traveling frequently, where we have, it's called defense in depth, where you have different layers of security that scrutinize your identity to make sure you're supposed to be getting to the things you get to and you have the permissions that you need to do that.
And what is the standard mechanism there? Do you operate over a VPN? Is there virtual desktop interfaces, or how does it all work?
We have a lot of different technologies that we use. Most of them operate in a similar way to VPN, where you'd have, where you'd be encrypting the traffic that's being transmitted between you and the campus. So there are a couple different ways of doing it. I'm not a big fan of naming like individual technologies we use, because like as a security analyst, if someone found a vulnerability with one of those things, that would put us at risk. But we do use different things to encrypt both the data while it's on our computers stored at rest and then in transit to communicate securely.
And I'm guessing that multi-factor authentication has probably been in place there for some time.
Yeah, I believe it's mandated by Department of Energy headquarters. So we follow their mandates very strongly.
Got it. And so is it fair to say then that at the moment, at least, and now we're almost 6 months into this pandemic, or at least into the response to it in the United States, that pretty much everyone is teleworking?
At the lab, I believe there are some people that are working on campus, especially those doing pandemic-related research, looking at the proteins that make up some of the virology. I'm not very knowledgeable on the area, but I do know that there are some people that have mission critical research that they're doing, and they're able to be on campus in a limited capacity. So there are guidelines towards how many people can be in a lab, how close you can be to another coworker, things like that, capacity rules.
But you as an individual in a program area in cybersecurity analysis, you are teleworking all the time now?
Correct. I'm teleworking until further notice. So a lot of my work can be done remotely, which is nice. So I have different facets of my research that I'm focusing on more because they're available to me in this remote capacity, where I can't have hands-on access to charging infrastructure right now. Unfortunately, I don't have like very powerful charging infrastructure by my condo. So I'm waiting off on that for a little while.
Roland Varialli is cybersecurity analyst at the Argonne National Laboratory. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
You have a file. Maybe it's a customer contract, a budget spreadsheet, or a video that tells your story. But this file is so much more than meets the eye. In fact, this single piece of content, a container for your most important data, holds the key to your success. This content can either help you solve your customer's problems, or if you ignore it, hold you back. We're here to help. Box. Simplify how you work. Find out more at box.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Roland Varialli, cybersecurity analyst at the Argonne National Laboratory, on the changing nature of work. You mentioned international travel and being in a research and academic flavored type of work. There's a lot of meetings in these fields. And what has been happening with those? Have they been canceled? Are they mostly all virtual and continuing? Or what do you see there?
I see a lot of it moving to virtual. There have been a lot of virtual conferences, a lot of virtual meetups. Some of our annual reviews for different subject matter areas have been completely virtualized and moved to like a Zoom platform or something like that. So I don't think that has waned very much. It's still very prevalent, and the quantity seems to at least have stayed the same, probably increased. I'm getting much more like notices about mini conferences, webinars, things like that.
Yes, and a lot of meetings have lots of people, and there's a lot of networking that happens. I mean, that's one of the reasons people have scientific meetings in great places, is for the networking. And it's not just for fun, but it's because you really exchange influence and build networks that can enhance research throughout a career. And so presuming that the International Association of Researchers in Car Charging, and I'm obviously making that up, would have 600 people, say, what is it like when all those people are online, and can you see them all? And how does that change the nature of the benefit that you get from from that collaboration from the community?
I think it's changed a little bit. So there's a lot more information diffusion. Like, it's easier to get information because there are so many meetings. I think drilling down and getting to know individual people and focusing on the networking aspect is a little more difficult, where you may need, if there aren't breakout rooms supported by the conference or something like that, or small group environments, you may need to be a little more proactive and identify people that may share research interests with you and reach out to them, either through like direct messaging during the chat of the event or something like that, to touch base with them, get to know them. And it may not be as like natural and fluid as it was in the past, where you could see people face to face and interact with them at a personal level. You almost need to create that personal connection yourself and then pursue it.
Yes, I was going to say, afterwards, do you ever follow up with people and say, hey, I caught what you said, and just talk to them on a one-on-one, one-on-one type of basis?
Yeah, and I mean, that's a part of security that a lot of people don't even consider. People are one of the most important parts of security. Getting to know people, reaching people, making relationships and connections. I was recently in a week-long training, and on the side, I was chatting with probably three or four people at the same time, exchanging contact information, understanding where they were coming from, and seeing how we could help each other in the future if our paths cross. So I think that's an active part that you may need to take a different approach towards it during remote work, but it can exist and flourish. It just may take a different direction.
Because you hear the unfortunate term, and I hate to even say it, of new normal, but beyond the new normal, whatever that might be, do you and your colleagues in this field harbor the sense that it's not the new normal and that things will return to the way they were?
I think it's more incorporating new tools into your work capabilities. So understanding how emerging technologies and remote technologies can help you accomplish what you need to get done at work. So we support the Department of Energy Cyberforce competition, and it looks at how do we secure our nation's critical infrastructure. And the shift this year has been on remote access only because no one is allowed on campus. So normally the students would come on campus and we would host an event and they would participate in physical person. However, this year is remote only. So a lot of the students are introduced to remote technologies, cloud technologies, and how they are integrated within this industrial control system space. So understanding not just cloud is bad, but cloud is a tool that can help us get certain functionality. How do we secure it properly? How do we move forward to ensure that we're not using 30-year-old techniques on modern technology? So I think this is another opportunity like that, where we can embrace technology and emerging solutions that are coming out to figure out how can we shift our way of thinking to secure these systems and incorporate them moving forward into more functional and more secure systems.
Yes, because a lot of federal agencies, and including the parent agency of Argonne Energy, have been under a cloud. First it was cloud first, now smart cloud. There's definitely a widespread initiative to move resources to cloud computing and getting away from federal data centers and the expense and so on. And so it seems like this maybe has accelerated the desire to do that, but also kind of made sharper the need to be able to do it securely and with modern ways, because you're not accessing something within a closed environment. Your wire to that data center.
Right. And we look at security as a requirement. So building in security as a functional requirement when we're looking at technologies. So not just using it because it's available or it fits a need, but looking at what is the overall risk with using this technology? Are we using it appropriately? And is this fitting all the needs that we require of it?
And just as a user, and someone who is sensitive to the user role in the whole cybersecurity equation, the kill chain, if you want, what have you noticed with respect to attempted attacks? I mean, I know in my own email, I see a lot more phishing types of things. And what have you seen? And what do you think how do you think the attack vectors are evolving in all of this?
I just have a general sense, because I'm not focused on threats as much. I look at a lot of organizational risk and resilience postures. However, a lot of people are fatigued because of working home, so many emails, so many communications. You just get kind of beaten down. So people may be letting their guard down if an email or some sort of attempt is crafted enticingly. So if you have a sophisticated attacker that creates something that looks very realistic, your guard may be down just enough where you may click on a link. Or sometimes people are so frustrated and there's so many things happening at home. So if you're taking care of children or taking care of a family member or doing multiple things at the same time, you may not be as focused as you could be in work, where you may be in a cubicle or something like that, where you're very focused on your work. And if this request were to come in, you wouldn't even consider it. However, with so many things happening and your attention being divided, that your guard may be down, and that may allow for an attacker to gain a little leverage when they previously wouldn't.
Yeah, so even if people get a email from the IT department indicating you've got to do this mandatory monthly IT security training, you don't even trust that email.
Yeah.
And you mentioned some of the organizational aspects that you look at. Maybe delve into those briefly.
I personally work on some Department of Homeland Security projects where we look at regional resilience. So we focus on relatively large areas across the United States and look at what could pose some risks to some of the infrastructure getting degraded or going down, something like that.
Roland Varialli is cybersecurity analyst at the Argonne National Laboratory. We'll return with our third and final segment of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
You have a file. Maybe it's a customer contract, a budget spreadsheet, or a video that tells your story. But this file is so much more than meets the eye. In fact, this single piece of content, a container for your most important data, holds the key to your success. This content can either help you solve your customers' problems, or if you ignore it, hold you back. We're here to help. Box. Simplify how you work. Find out more at box.com.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of an interview with Roland Varialli, cybersecurity analyst at the Argonne National Laboratory. And let's get back to the campus. We talked about international travel. We talked about industrial partners. The relationship with colleagues that you normally would be in contact with in person day after day, the water cooler types of colleagues that you saw maybe 3 days a week out of the five working days, although if you're like a lot of us, sometimes there's a Saturday morning thrown in there too. How does that feel differently now?
It's different because it's a lot more asynchronous. So it's not, so when you're talking to someone down a hallway and you're chit-chatting back and forth, it's synchronous. You're in lockstep. You understand the cadence of the conversation, things like that. When you're working remotely, it's asynchronous. So I can message one of my teammates, even if they say they're online, and maybe I get a response back in 30 minutes or 40 minutes. So it's kind of tweaking your expectations a little bit as well. So there's a lot more following up and things like that, and a little more leeway that we give. So a good example of that is we had a lot of student interns this summer, so about a dozen in my group. And understanding how their work schedules work off campus was a little challenging for us, because normally we just walk by, chit-chat, say hi, what's up? Whereas now if you message them every morning, they'll start to get a little agitated after a few days, because that's not exactly as normal as coming by and chit-chatting.
Yes, they're coming into the workforce as neophytes without really having any understanding of how a workforce normally operates in the first place.
Right.
Which is
so
kind of
aligning their understanding with our objectives and hashing all that out is a little more challenging remotely. But I believe we were one of the only Department of Energy labs to support like a full summer internship program this summer.
Wow. And everyone worked remotely and virtually.
Yeah. And it culminated in a virtual poster session that broadcast their research across the whole campus.
And I wonder if you've heard whether they have like virtual frat parties on the campus, or are those real?
I don't know, but that would be social distancing. So
it sure would. And what's your sense of what might be the permanent changes in work here? What do you think this is going to look like? Because you're fairly young, but you've had experience working the way it was before the pandemic.
Right.
But you've got a long career ahead.
I hope so. So I hope this is incorporated within, I see this a lot on some resilience assessments that I go on, that people consider their current operating condition and operating status as the status quo. and don't incorporate possible ways of mitigating events such as this or a natural disaster through alternative means like telework or extended telework. So a lot of organizations will consider telework for a limited amount of time. However, in certain sectors like the finance sector, you're mandated to telework a certain amount, or you're mandated to take vacations, to rotate staff, to, there are a bunch of reasons to mitigate or eliminate insider threat or fraud, things like that.
Right.
So understanding how telework can fit into your business objectives and how it can support your company, possibly during continuity of business or disaster recovery, I think was something people may not have considered before this, but they may understand the technology now. They may have a firmer grasp on how to integrate it within their current operational procedures. So it may be just another tool that people can leverage to enhance their resilience and continue their business in the future in case they incur something like this.
And just to wrap this all up, looking at the project you're working on, the cybersecurity and the very specialized area of the infrastructure, do you feel that productivity and the progress toward the weekly and yearly goals has continued pretty much apace?
I was very fortunate because I got a lot of the work I needed done physically done before the pandemic. So I dodged a big bullet there. And a lot of my work has shifted to remote, looking at remote vulnerabilities. So I think so far, all of my objectives for the year are on course and look to be able to be completed within the fiscal year.
Roland Varialli is cybersecurity analyst at the Argonne National Laboratory. To hear this interview in its entirety or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for September, the future of work. Sponsored by Box on Federal News Network.